Hello, Degrassi alumni. Welcome back to another episode of the D-Grads podcast, the Degrassi Rewatch podcast, with yours truly, Shane Kippel, Spinner.
And me, Mike Lobel, Jay Hogarth.
And let's not forget our lovely producer, Andy, with the sexy voice. Andy, please show off that voice.
I'm so excited about episode 3.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's right. Today we are talking about episode 3. Family Politics.
Oh, I want to say the title, Mike.
But wait, you stepped on my line.
Oh.
I thought I was supposed to say Andy was handsome.
That's why we need to have a pre-meeting before the podcast. Okay. All right. Okay. We're gonna hammer on through here. Now, let me just set the table for what was going on in the world at the time that this episode came out, which was October 21st, 2001. So we already covered in an earlier episode that the number one song on the Billboard charts at that point in the U.S. was J-Lo featuring Ja Rule, I'm Real. Nothing changed on a week-to-week basis. But in the U.K. on this day, it was Afro Man, Because I Got High.
That was like my entire high school experience.
And mine too, which is why we both flunked out, just like the song. It makes perfect sense. if you are a baseball fan, which I am, come at me if you have a problem with that. The National League Championship Series ended with the Diamondbacks defeating the Braves 4-1. Yeah. There was a huge benefit concert in the U.S. for September 11th victims. It was called United We Stand at RFK Stadium in D.C. The headliners were Michael Jackson, Aerosmith, Mariah Carey, and the Backstreet Boys.
Oh, man.
That's a crazy lineup.
Michael Jackson and the Backstreet Boys on the same stage. What a passing of the torch moment.
Very much so. And to finish out, the number one movie at the box office when this episode came out was Training Day with Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke. Fantastic movie. Maybe better than Degrassi. It depends on what your cup of tea is.
Just different.
Just different. Just a little bit different.
I love them all the same.
And the number one show was also not Degrassi. It was Survivor Africa, episode 7. And that should set the table of what we're dealing with when this episode came out. All right.
Wait, was that Survivor season 1?
Africa was season 3. I think Australia was season 2.
Are you a Survivor fan? You seem to have a deep knowledge.
I was back then. I watched the first like 3 or 4 seasons religiously. It was the first reality show, of course.
I just like didn't watch it. I heard about it from everybody, so I didn't feel like I needed to.
It was huge in my home and everyone that I knew, but I didn't watch it either because I, to this day, just don't like reality shows. The only type that I've watched have been like, you know, Kitchen Confidential, something like that. But like the contest shows or anything like that, I just never was my thing. But it was huge here. Survivor was gigantic.
Oh yeah, the only reality that I really care about at all since the time of Survivor is Restaurant Impossible. There's something about Robert Irvine just with his massive bulging muscles and his take no shit attitude just walking all over these poor people who are just trying to get their restaurant to make some money. And he turns into a therapist and thinks that he's going to fix like 30 years of, you know, broken family relationships in a 24-hour period. It's hilarious, but I love it. I love it.
Well, I'm a love is blind junkie, so I do my trash TV. I'm not saying it's trash. I don't mean to say that, but you know what I'm saying. Reality TV.
Yeah.
But I'm addicted.
With an ex, I was introduced to to The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. I never watched it before. I tried actively to stay away from it. And there's something about the formula with reality TV that if you watch an episode or two, somehow you get hooked. It does not matter how hard you fight. Yeah. They have a winning formula over there.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. All right. Well, it might not be reality drama. It's scripted, but it is quite intense in its own right. Episode 3, Family Politics. This was a fun one.
It was.
And I got to say, There are a lot of new characters introduced in this episode.
This actually felt like the first episode. It felt like the first Degrassi episode. You know, the reunion was more like a movie. It introduced enough of the characters, but it was not about the school yet. It was about just reintroducing, getting people excited about Degrassi. But this felt like day one of school, you know?
Yeah. And Shane, this is a very momentous occasion for you, sir.
Are you talking about Shane Kippel's first speaking line on camera ever?
Yes, I am. We meet Spinner in this episode, and I didn't realize you were so much of a bully to start with.
Yeah. that's why I was there. But, you know, as I touched on a little earlier, every time I'm on screen, all I'm doing here is cringing to myself. Everything else is cool, and I watch myself.
It was cool, man. You were like, you know, it was like spitball kind of bully.
It was literally spitball kind of bully. But let's get into the episode before we get into too much of why I'm self-conscious about this episode. So it starts out, family politics, starts out with Ashley on the phone with Terry talking about boys and then very quickly moving on to the fact that she is running for class president. She wants to be, is it class president or school president?
School president.
Yeah. She is... Yeah, she's shooting for the stars, hoping to land on the moon. She doesn't care about the class. She wants the whole thing. And then, which I actually completely forgot about, we very quickly establish that Ashley and Toby are, you know, essentially stepbrother and stepsister.
She's not my stepsister.
Toby is so miffed in this whole episode. He's incensed.
For a good reason and also no reason at all, which is that not what childhood is all about, really?
I understand, though, obviously, like, this is a big life change for these two kids. They're, you know, now they have a blended home and it's going to be tricky. Like, there's no two ways about it.
I just cannot believe that I totally blanked on the fact that they were related at all. This was a big surprise to me.
Me too. I had no idea.
Okay.
I was like, whoa, what?
Okay, so we're idiots together, pretty much.
Yeah, we're and you know what? The fans are gonna, you know, we might get insulted for it. I don't know.
Maybe death threats?
Could be.
I think it's warranted. I think it's warranted.
But this is just us, you and me, Shane, like, you know, discovering the series for the first time in earnest and kind of coming to our own conclusions and our own understanding of the show and becoming fans.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. People, don't come after us. We're doing our best here.
Take it easy on us.
Yeah. All right. but also this made me remember, I was the youngest of four boys, and waiting for the bathroom in the morning.
Oh yeah.
The amount of wasted time just pounding on that door. It didn't matter what side you were on. Like, obviously it was better if you were the one in the bathroom than stuck on the outside, but you were not having a relaxing time if you were doing, getting up to your morning business and you had three people pounding on the door and jiggling the handle. Yeah, no, hated those mornings with a full house.
Totally. I'm in the same situation, you know, eldest of three. And so I get it. It's valuable time, bathroom time and phone time. Those two things. Yep. Always fun.
And it did feel really real. I mean, we had no girls growing up in my house, hence the, you know, youngest of four boys. But if there was a bra drying over the shower rack, I would definitely have pissed off a sister of mine at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you have put it on and made that incredible?
I would have found a way to turn it into some sort of slingshot one day. I would have had ideas.
Toby Jake Goldsby, he really went for it with that bra moment, and I loved it. I also loved Ashley's reaction to that and the choice to go full close-up, like extreme close-up on her mouth.
Yeah.
when she screams out in horror was like, it just felt so highly stylized 80s nostalgia to me.
Yeah.
It was a great choice.
I agree.
I didn't realize how stylized these episodes were until this second watch through when I'm actually paying attention to everything. It is really stylized. And there's also more handheld camera shots in this. Like, it's just a really interesting show to look at.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of handheld, then we, after, you know, the close-up on Ashley yelling mom, we go to the opening credits, whatever it takes, yada, yada, yada. And then we are in front of the school and we have a pretty decent Warner. For anyone who is not a film buff or works in the industry, a one-shot is where there is a lot of camera movement, taking you usually from one group to another group to another group. Many cues have to go off perfectly. The focus has to be perfect. And we had a nice camera movement with some background players on the picnic bench, then bouncing a basketball off and then crossing with JT and Toby. I'm like, bold move for episode 3.
I totally forgot about that, Shane. Like, I don't pick up on wonders usually when they happen, especially if they're good, because I'm just so into to what I'm seeing. But I do kind of remember that now as being a little bit of a style that we kind of developed over the years, especially outside of school, because we're often, the camera is often going between friend groups and conversations as the kids are arriving, right? So we're picking up a little piece here, then the camera kind of pans across and picks up a new set of characters. And so you can do that twice, three times, maybe even four times. And I feel like we actually did establish some sort of like style that we would do that frequently.
I think so too. But as we know, time is money in film. And I think the reason that most people try to stay away from one-ers like the plague is if they go wrong and you have to do them over and over and over and over again, you're just burning through that time, burning through the money. Later on, well, we had some pretty intense one-ers. The famous story that always comes to mind with me that I'm sure you two know about is the restaurant scene in Goodfellas that took them, three days, three full days to get that one entrance shot?
Oh, man.
Think about how many things had to go right for that. Anyway, back to the episode.
Yeah. We're going Scorsese now. It's great. We're just tying it all to Degrassi.
JT was on a scooter. They had those back then?
Wait, like a Razor scooter? I also missed that.
Is that what they were called? The one where you like, it's somewhere between like a bike and a skateboard. Like, you know, it's a skateboard with handles.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that called a scooter though? Am I crazy?
Yeah. You know what? I guess they did just come out with them. This is 2002.
Yeah. Well, the Razor scooters came out in 2000, and that was like the big brand. Everybody had a Razor scooter. Right. I don't know if JT's is a Razor, but yeah, it is one of those styles of scooters with the tiny wheels, and it's all really skinny, and you could do like tricks and stuff on it. Yeah. Those came out in 2000. And so yeah, they were really popular at the time.
Ripped from the headlines. We are premiering new tech, toy tech here.
I wonder if because Degrassi was so new at that point, they couldn't afford the Razor. So it's like, no, this is a Blazor, but like close enough. But I digress. So they're walking into the school, the tilt up to see Degrassi, you know, the letters over the front steps. Really made it feel like everyone was getting to school for the first time, not just for a reunion party. And then we see Paige for the first time.
Wow.
Walking up. Yeah, she killed it. Lauren had pizzazz, if nothing else.
Pizzazz is the word. Because her shirt, which says hottie, could have also just as easily said pizzazz.
It could have.
It would have been the same effect.
It could have said Riz. That would be more appropriate if it had to be CGI'd on to make it, you know, age appropriate now.
And there's that kid who's looking at her. She's got clear luggage. She's open toe lifts. She's got her hottie t-shirt on. And this guy just crashes into a locker behind her because he's gawking at her, which is a nice touch and very funny.
I thought it was so funny how one-dimensional a lot of the characters are early on, because they want us to know this is the bully, this is the hot girl, this is so-and-so. And then towards the end, everybody's like a completely different character and they've developed so much. But in these early episodes, it's like, oh yeah, that's the bully, that's the hot girl.
Andy, that is such an astute point. I couldn't put my finger on that, but I did feel, yeah, like we were playing these tropes. And even with Melissa's character, I was like, wow, Melissa ends the show in such a different place than where she starts here, as this sort of like, she's almost got this like, you know, this overachiever, American cheerleader kind of driven to success, very like American film kind of quality about her. And then, yeah, it's, but it was really cool to see.
Yeah. And Terry being like the sort of the mild mannered girl next door, as we said, Spinner, just the one-dimensional bully. We didn't get too much of a read on who Jimmy was at that point.
No.
Jimmy does have lines, but any scene with Spinner, Jimmy is just kind of like sidekick to Spinner. So we don't really know who Jimmy is yet, though he's always wearing a basketball jersey and carrying a ball with him. So I think we are to understand that he has a tendency to play sports. And then later on, he also throws his arm around Ashley. And we're like, all right.
That's right.
Okay. Okay. All right. This is a thing. Jimmy and Ashley are an item.
Can I just say your introduction, sir? Stepping on poor Emma's books that she's just dropped. So rude. How did you prepare for that?
I didn't even make notes on that. I guess I wanted to blow past every scene that I was in.
Do you feel guilty? Maybe a little twinge of guilt in there?
Well,
for your behavior on camera?
I am not a mean guy. So the fact that I got to play a bully in a controlled environment, I was all about it. I was stepping out of my, you know, my comfort zone in terms of, you know, just I was, if anything, I was the one that used to get bullied when I was younger. So to turn around and play the bully, it was a lot of fun for me. You know, if you're going to walk in on the first day of school and think that you're going to just avoid this brooding, you know, this ogre of the hallways, and you're going to drop your papers right in front of him and shit's not going to pop off? Sorry, you're in the wrong school.
Speaking of dropping, your voice is just barely dropped by this point. I loved it. You are in a different stage of your life, my friend. Did you notice that?
I remember in season 2, I had this voice already, and it just, so weird on a 15-year-old, 16-year-old kid. Yeah. So weird.
Let's talk about puberty today.
You should see my bar mitzvah video, man, if you really want to laugh.
Great. Let's put it up. Put it up on the screen.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But yes, it was fun. And I was so excited to have a you know, multiple speaking scenes in the episode and hitting marks and doing all this stuff. All that being said, my performance, this is going to be tough. Any Spinner scene anywhere. I'll let me fill you in on something. I was, from a young age, I had a lisp and I also would stammer a lot. So at that age, I was working with a speech pathologist to try to get over both of them. But when I was nervous, the only way that I could not stumble on my words was to speak very slowly. So when in these scenes, when I'm seeing myself, dude, why are you taking forever to just get this line out? What are you doing? But that's why I couldn't do it any other way. I was so nervous to be there and I didn't want to. Great Thevens are so stupid. Like it, that wouldn't have gone well.
No, man, you were great. And I didn't notice any of what you just said. I thought it was terrific. I thought you did a really good job. And I love the ear piercings.
I'm pretty sure I got hired for those piercings.
So many. All 17 of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There were more to come the longer the show went. But you didn't get to see all of them. Anyway.
Jeez.
So let's move on with the episode, please. Uh-huh. So yes, Spinner and Jimmy, the hall pass scene, and then we see Mr. Simpson bringing his brand new homeroom class in to the what are they calling it? The media lab?
I think it was the media lab. Yeah,
media immersion. I think.
Oh, yeah. It was media immersion. That's right. Yeah. Thanks, Andy, coming in with the facts.
And it really was like you just see it really did feel like you felt that first day of school excitement and who's gonna be friends with who and who's gonna pick on who and just everyone getting their bearings. And I really did find even picking their seats and giggling, and I'm trying to pick out other main cast members in those seats that hadn't spoken yet. Like I saw Sarah, I saw, anyway, it was fun for me. Nothing to add? Okay, cool.
Nothing.
I'll move on.
I got nothing to say to that. No, what I was gonna say was, I was funny, like the rules in this, the school are so strict because Mr. Simpson's like, nope, here's no hats. He like grabs JT's hat off and he's talking about, here's the pages of, you know, the agreement of your code of conduct. And I just thought, wow, these kids are in for a rough time.
I think it was mainly because they were in the computer lab. I think they just had to be like, hey, no hacking, no porn.
That's like the 2025 code of conduct.
Mr. Simpson, at this point, he had already witnessed what happened to Emma, and maybe he just drafted this the night before. He's like, hey.
Probably.
Okay. Rule number one, no catfishing. In fact, just stay out of chat rooms altogether.
I know this is media immersion, but no computers and no internet.
You're forbidden to log on.
Now, did you all get my email that I sent out today?
Oh man, so funny. So I like that now Spinner is already becoming infamous with Emma and Cassie. I hope we don't run into that jerk again. That jerk is me. That's great. Now Toby has this idea because he's a little brat and he just doesn't like that Ashley is, well, he had to move into their house and now he has lost his privacy and his maybe his sense of autonomy, whatever that means at 13 years old.
His space.
Yeah. And now he formulates a plan when he realizes that Ashley is running unopposed for school president, that JT should run against Ashley. And drama ensues.
Wow, poor Toby. He is taking this really poorly. The joke campaign, he convinces JT, right? Like he needs to essentially butter him up saying, hey, this is a great opportunity for you to just do stand-up comedy, which is what you want to do, right? You want to get famous and be a stand-up comedian. I don't know exactly how he hopes this is going to go down. Like it seems doomed from the beginning to blow up in his face because it's intense.
Yeah, it just seemed like, as they say later in the episode, something to make Ashley sweat. I don't think anyone at that point thought that JT had any chance to win. As they said, a grade 7 has never won, so you don't really have to worry about it. But just like, let's mess Ashley up for a little bit and stress her out. And that's all Toby really wants. He wants to get back at her for things she has not done and doesn't deserve. Yeah.
The difference between the grade 7s and grade 8s, like this is, now I'm remembering my high school experience. Back then, it was like, you might as well have been in a different generation. It's like different planets almost. And it's only you're only 1 year apart. But it was nice to see in this episode, we've got some more senior students coming back, Ashley, you know, and that to sort of counterbalance and check the younger crew.
Yeah. Fun fact, my junior high school, many junior highs only, I'm talking about my real junior high school, many of them only went up to grade 8 because high school went from 9 to 12, but my junior high went 7 to 9. And the reason for that was so they didn't have to integrate in as freshmen. They were already coming in as grade 10s to a high school that had a younger year. So we were immediately in, when we went to high school, we're able to pick on the younger kids. And it felt right. It felt right. Yeah. Yeah.
You're primed for picking.
Yeah, they were.
That's
they
probably
were,
why you got this part.
Amongst other things. We already established it was mainly the piercings and the spiked hair. So we've established that Jimmy is dating Ashley. We established that Toby is just a brat. And now he's putting up the posters for JT running. And you see...
He's a really smart brat.
He is a smart brat, which makes him that much more dangerous in his brattiness.
Yeah. And those posters had me... The whole copy machine gag with Mr. Simpson was pretty funny. Mm-hmm. The 10 cents a page, and Toby's like, I can't afford 10 cents a page.
I'm ruined!
And the posters say on it, the poster reads, JT York, unknown, unremarkable, underachieving. It's basically a no campaign, right?
Speaking of no, did you realize that even though his picture wasn't on it because he is unknown, goes with their...
Yes, it was a stick man.
It was a stick man with no arms.
Oh, weird.
At least that's how I perceived it. I saw what is usually the male symbol on the bathroom, but armless.
Yeah.
Unless I'm crazy. And I'm wondering if that was part of the plan, just to excite people and go, I wonder who this armless unknown grade 7 is.
Yeah,
I want to meet him.
Totally. Another weird thing that I noticed, I picked up, and this is deep conspiracy level thinking, but if you look at JT York, and if you take out the T and the Y and the R, it spells joke.
Ah.
Is it just me?
Okay. It might just be you, but hey, we can call up those writers and ask them.
He's a funny kid. He wants to be a stand-up comedian. I mean, I don't know.
But you know why his name is JT, right?
Oh my God, why?
James Tiberius Kirk.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. One of our writers was a big Trekkie.
That's right.
And that's the tip of the hat to Mr. William Shatner's character. I also thought it was so delightful that there was that handheld camera, the recorder.
Oh yeah, the mini DV camcorder, the election camcorder.
That's what I was looking. Yes. For those of you that are too young to know what a camcorder was, it was before we all had cameras and video recording equipment in our pockets, you had to carry something that was, twice the size of most speakers today, any Bluetooth speaker that you would have, and hold it up. And you get that really grainy black and white time stamped image. But the reason I'm bringing this up is, Emma walks into it and it was one of those, hey, oh, I didn't see you there. And then goes right into answering a question that no one asked her.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, was it a setup or was that just poorly planned? It was cute no matter what. But what was your take on that, Mike? Was it a ploy?
I did notice that too. I mean, I can forgive a little creative license for unprompted answered questions. It's sort of this like confession cam style interview, right? So it's like it's man on the street, camera in the face, and it's hard to get in and out of those scenes. So a little creative liberty getting that to happen is fine. I bought it too.
I just wanted to draw attention to it. Speaking of creative liberty, we also see that Liberty is a very ambitious grade 7.
Yo, I see what you did there.
I was going to totally jump in and do that exact line.
Oh, yeah. Hey, guys. Yeah. And she is really trying to encroach on Ashley's territory and sort of work her way into a... she's calling herself secretary, but I really think she means vice president. And yeah, just waiting for Ashley to get assassinated so she could take the hot seat.
I was wondering why Liberty didn't run for president, because she seems like she's got it.
I would think it's because she's a grade 7. I would think that's why. But she could also be, she seems like the kind that wants to work from, behind the scenes. She's more of like the mastermind.
The one with the real power.
Right. That's right. The deep state, if you will. Mm-hmm. I really did It's funny that you say Machiavellian, because later on in this episode, Ashley's methods were quite Machiavellian.
Oh, heck yes. So
let's get back to that. So we establish also very well in our caricatures of, you know, all of the tropes, all of the archetypes. JT is very much the class clown, and he's like a fish in water. He plays that role so well, standing on the picnic table and
so well cast. Wow. He's so funny and so charming. I was blown away. And he's so small, you know. He was terrific.
Just oozing with mischief.
Yeah. And his outfit was like, you know, like almost like Ace Ventura-esque.
Yeah.
He's going for that early 2000s comedian vibe.
He's whatever he does, he's making statements. He's making statements with every move and every word. And JT/Ryan Cooley, I feel it. I like it. I bought it.
It's great, man. He was so good on the show. I just, before we move on, do you notice that like none of the kids are in school for most of this episode? Like the almost exclusively just running their campaigns. And then at the beginning, Raditz says something to the effect of like, we need all the name. Everyone has to sign up by end of day for school council. And I'm thinking, this is the first day of school. You're having these kids jump in right away to run a campaign to try to get selected and nominated for this. It's not a lot of time.
Well, I think we remember the first day of school is more performative than anything else. Nothing really goes on that first day except, you know, reacquainting and trying to establish yourself. It's Frosh Week for high schoolers, you know?
I was just skipped it, Shane.
Wow, you were so cool.
Yeah, I was real cool. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Speaking of which, I guess I also forgot to take notes on this, but there was a classroom scene where we see Miss Kwan for the first time and establish again that Spinner is he's the bully. And I guess a class clown in a different way from JT, definitely not as bright a light as JT, but that one line, Gavin, I prefer Spinner. Am I going to give you another 14 detentions this year?
Amazing.
Not if you don't want to, except half that speed. It was, yeah. There were a couple classroom scenes, but you're right. Was school going on at all? I am not too sure.
When I saw Spinner, sorry, Shane, it's not you, it's a character. When I saw you appear the first time, I thought, man, this kid is so much trouble. And then the second thought was, okay, so he's prefers the name Spinner. This is the first time we're kind of getting a sense of that. Okay, this is not his real name. Just a question, because again, I'm all new to watching the series from front to back. When was the explanation of the nickname? How long do we have to wait to get there?
I believe it was episode 7, if memory serves correctly. It was in the character breakdown.
In season 1.
In season 1. It was in the character breakdown for the audition, so I know. But I'm not going to tell you, Mike.
Yeah,
you're
going
to have to find out for yourself.
I can't wait. Well, I already know. But like I had to search like the deepest recesses of my brain to remember.
Yeah. The funny thing is, for anyone, I will not spoil anything, but for anyone out there that actually knows the answer, you also then know that it's spoken of, it's explained in this episode that we are hinting at, and then never spoken of again, ever.
Oh.
For the entirety of the series, yes. And sometimes that makes sense, but when you understand the reason that he has the nickname Spinner, it actually does not make too much sense that it's never referenced again. But I digress. We will get there when we get there.
We certainly will.
But We now see Ashley finally grilling Toby about what the hell are you trying to do getting your dumb friend to run against me. And this happens at home. And one of my favorite moments of the entire episode plays out where Ashley's having the conversation with Toby, like, what's happening over here? Why are you doing this? And then the mom comes in. And all she says is, hey, what's going on here, Ashley? And the response is, great, take his side. And,
and my wife and I laughed so hard at that because I was like, whoa, whoa, actually.
Calm down. Dude. Calm down. All she asked was, what's happening right here? But what made it even better is by the end of that scene, Ashley's mom is 100% taking Toby's side. With... like, she's like, well, you know, JT has every right to run against you. And I'm like, okay, Ashley, you knew something that we didn't know. You just like, mom is always taking Toby's side. So as soon as she opens her mouth, it's like, great, mom, again. That was very special to me.
I did like earlier in the episode when Toby's making copies of the flyer for JT and he's at the copy machine and he's got it open. And he's like making copies with the thing open and it's like shining in his face and stuff. And they're all coming out perfectly fine. But I see how that was like an artistic choice because the camera is like very low and it's looking up at him with the light shining on his face. Mm-hmm. And it's like a cool little shot. But I was thinking like, that's not going to work. He's got the lid open.
Totally. Mm-hmm. I would have noticed that, Andy, if I hadn't been stuck on how cheap those photocopies were that freaked him out. He's having a financial meltdown.
The flyer was so weird.
Yeah. It was great.
I'm ruined. That's like 3 weeks worth of allowance. How am I going to get my ice cream?
Totally. I will say this before we move on, but Ashley's mom taking Toby's side, very diplomatic. That's got to be a tough situation for the parents as much as it is for the kids. It's weird all around. And I think you kind of got to not, you don't want to show so much favoritism to your own kid in a situation like that. So I thought, you know, that's pretty good. Pretty realistic.
It was pretty realistic. I agree with you. And it's a bit of foreshadowing because later in the episode, there will be a callback to that that Ashley will use. But we'll get to that. Also, before we get out of that specific scene, there was a very bad cut. And I don't know if you two realized it.
I saw it.
You saw it?
I totally saw it. Yeah.
Ashley had her mouth open to start to speak. And then we cut. And come on.
But I thought, okay, so this is early editing, and I've actually met some of the editors of Degrassi. I've worked with some of the editors as an editor myself now, and I gotta say, like, they were cutting on film. It was a different beast, and it was maybe a little harder to make changes, but yeah, I did see that.
I felt like that Leo meme from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where,
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll let that one go. As long as it does not become a habit, a theme of bad cuts, I'll allow that one to slide. And there's not much I could do about it anyway. So Paige, now she has her moment on the camcorder talking about, like, is she just shit-talking Ashley because she wants to have all the attention? I didn't, like, whose side was she on?
I don't know. She's kind of on her own side. She just wants to, like, promote herself. I thought for sure she's going to throw her hat into the ring.
I don't think she's going for school president. That seems like too nerdy of a goal for her. She even said that she wanted to start up the spirit squad, which she's the head cheerleader.
Yeah.
There's no overlap there, I don't think. Even in the opening credits, Ashley and Terry are in the school choir and later, we can't talk about it yet. But when we start doing newer, I guess I will talk about it because no one's stopping me. Later on when we have new opening credits, Paige is there as head cheerleader. So that's more her thing. But it is true. She is a woman apart and wants to establish herself as a force and somehow takes this campaign video and makes it about what she's going to be doing with her life and her new fashion and everything.
And she throws in a real obvious hearty Canadian A into that scene. It was the first time I noticed, like, I hear the Canadian now.
It is slowly becoming that Nick Kroll Degrassi parody. Yes.
Totally.
We'll talk about that at some other point, but there is a Degrassi parody out there by the great Nick Kroll, and Mike brought it to my attention about a year ago. I had no idea, and it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And Lauren Collins is actually in it, so.
Yeah. Wheels, Ontario. Check it out.
Wheels, Ontario.
It's very funny. I love it.
It is so twisted in the best way.
We should probably just do an entire episode of that Nick Kroll sketch, because it's pretty. He basically shot an entire episode of Degrassi.
We will do an entire episode just talking about that with Nick Kroll as our special guest for that week.
Great. Let's book him.
Yeah. Let's book him. Andy, get on that, please. Okay. So JT is leading in the polls. We find this out. And for the first time, they realize maybe this isn't so much a joke anymore. JT does not want this job. And Toby also established that he just wanted Ashley to sweat. I think what we saw in that scene, it was very important. Like, JT does not want to do the extra work. He's enjoying the joke. And as much as Toby really wants Ashley to hurt, he also, at the end of the day, didn't want her to lose. He just wanted to make it hard on her. So that shows that this man does have a heart somewhere deep down.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's defrosting. It's defrosting a little bit.
Yeah.
I was proud of him.
At the same time, I also got the sense in that scene with JT, where he's like complaining about the amount of work he would have to do if he got elected. I did notice Toby's reaction was, I felt it was like a little sinister. Like I felt like he was out for blood. He kind of let the mask slip a little bit there. He changes in the upcoming scenes, but there it was like, whoa, dude, why are you being like this? And he's just like, I gotta screw her life up. I'm doing it.
I guess so. I saw a little bit of Toby. Well, he was telling JT, don't worry. These are just polls. It's not going to happen. Maybe I took it maybe I was looking into it too deeply. And you might be correct about that, Mike.
Hey, man, it's whatever. It's in the eye of the beholder, I guess.
I'm just wondering where this hatred came from. He really does not like her at all. And she seems to, maybe the fact that she seems to be so nice and welcoming to him just makes him hate her all that much more, because he feels bad about himself and then reinforces it with just anger.
Possibly. Or maybe Toby is actually just taking way too long in the bathroom every day.
Could be that. Well, we know what a 13-year-old boy would be taking very long in the bathroom for.
Yeah, checking the status of his mustache growth.
Right, right. And if there's anything going on under the arms. Yes, that's what I was getting at.
Counting the whiskers.
That's what I was getting at. So, there is then Spinner and Jimmy appear again as the mafia henchmen, the hired guns. Once again, I have no recollection of this scene of just strong arming JT and dragging him into the locker room and leaving him at Ashley's feet. But there it was. Apparently it happened. And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that.
That was another cool shot.
Yeah.
The low angle as you guys are dragging him down the hallway. I thought that was kind of a nifty little character shot, I guess. What would you call it? Very sympathetic to the action.
Yes. That's what I would say. Yes, Mike, if you're looking for agreement on that. I liked how you're starting to see that Spinner and Jimmy are just inseparable, and they really enjoy tormenting kids for, you know, whatever the reason is. No reason is too small to pick on a grade 7. And that scene was quite funny for me, especially because I don't remember shooting that at all. Not in the slightest, not the most vague of recollections. But that brings us to the payoff, the bribe.
Ooh.
Becoming a real political campaign. Ashley, the good, the noble, takes the white gloves off Mike, what did you think of that?
I mean, I love the haggling of it all, you know, where she starts with what? She started with $50.
$50.
Ended with $80, more money than JT could fathom. And I loved all of JT's little excuses too. At one, he even says like his parents had to go on medication because of like his past behavior, which was, he's pretty quick and funny. But yeah, so Ashley has just become your general garden variety politician at this point, and she's trying to rig the election.
Push came to shove, and she is shoving back. And I was a little disappointed. I understand why, but Ashley, you were supposed to be better than that. You're supposed to be better than us.
Yeah, totally. And I couldn't blame JT either, because like I did the math, and $80 Canadian back then is like worth $130 now. That's an insane amount.
Yeah, he could have gotten a brand new Grazer scooter or Blazer scooter, whatever you guys are calling it.
Or made so many photocopies and not had to think about it once.
He could have paid for all those photocopies, millions of them.
Well, Ashley's bribe does work. I like how it went from 50 to 60 to 65 to 80. It just seemed like it seemed like a weird choice. Okay, he's not biting at 50. I'll go 60. He's not biting at 60. 65 should do it though. I think the jump to 80 made more sense after that, but I was expecting a 50 to 100 to like, all right, 200 final offer. That's, if I was in her shoes, I would have gone big and probably not had to go home. But, you know, that it wasn't my place. I was not running for the school president. So
that's some real money.
But if I had, just know that that's real money right there. How much would 200 Canadian back then be worth today, Mike? At least 500,000.
Well, let me do the calculations. $1 million.
Oh, on the dot. Crazy. Oh, and also pay homage to the old paper Canadian 20s.
I love those. I could almost smell them through the screen.
Smell of sweat and dirt and...
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Too many pockets. Yeah. So, Spinner goes back to tormenting the girls. Of course. That is the spitball, which was so corny.
The spitball sniper over here making Manny cry.
The spitball sound effect, I think, was the cheesiest thing that has happened so far.
Yeah.
It was like something right out of Bugs Bunny and Tweety, I think.
It was cool. It was like a penny whistle or something. It was like a...
And yes, Cassie, Manny chooses to cry. And there you see that Spinner has a little bit of a heart. But I'm just wondering, what did he really think was going to happen tormenting these little girls? I'm sure he's made little girls cry and like, oh, wait, no. Everything's cool until the waterworks start and then, no, I got to get out of here. It seems like that would be his goal, right?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe he just thought, oh man, I took it too far. A spitball. I shouldn't have. It's too much. I knew this was going to backfire. Anyways, no. I'm upset that you hurt my Manuela.
But she was not, in fact, hurt, Mike. She was playing her own game just to get Spinner away. And it worked, and it worked. And you saw a slightly softer side of Spinner, and you see the girls toughening up on the first day of school. Or, you know, was it still the first day? No.
Yeah. Maybe that was the second day.
Yeah. They're starting to get it. They need to, you know, the gloves need to come off for them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Did we see Principal Radich before this episode?
We did. We saw him. I think we saw him in episode one.
Yeah, he was walking Toby and his dad through the school.
Right. Okay, so never mind the next line I have. But now we get to the climax where... the in front of the whole school, the campaign speeches are going on, and which will be put to a vote afterwards. And Toby has found out about the bribe, and he stands side stage and tries to get Ashley's attention, which is as TV as these moments get. And she has to just quietly excuse herself and sneak out. And then hear that Toby is planning on going out there and telling the entire school that the good, the noble, the just Ashley has bribed her way into this win. Now, one thing I will say about it before I let you talk, Mike, is with the when you see their scene going on just outside of the auditorium, you see JT through the glass panes on the window still making that speech. And you and I know in film, he is not saying anything. He is, he's acting to an empty room. But he is so full of life when he's doing it. And I'm just wondering, I wish I could have been a fly on the wall there, just seeing what he was doing, what he was up to. Cause it looked pretty real. It looked like he was giving a very animated speech.
I mean, his character, JT, this entire, his story arc is just like, I just want to have my moment to shine on stage and tell jokes. And he gets it. Like, he gets his full moment. He delivers this entire speech that he's planned. All of his jokes hit. I thought the jokes were funny, personally. 41-year-old Mike currently thinks those are funny jokes. And then he goes, oh yeah, by the way, and then I'm also out of the race, and sits down. Because mission accomplished, he's done his bit, his stand-up comedy. That's all JT wanted.
And he even did say, when he accepted the bribe from Ashley, oh great, I still get to do my speech. Because as you said, that's really all he wanted. He just wanted his moment to stand up there with a mic and JT out, which he definitely did. I don't think he was expecting Radich turning around and going, we're going to talk about this kid. But
wait, did Radich actually say that to JT?
Yeah. When JT said, when he sat down after bowing out,
yeah,
Radich goes up to the mic and says, JT, you're sure about this? And JT goes, yep. And he's like, okay, we'll talk about this later. And JT's face drops.
Oh, okay. Yep. I missed that. Because I was like, why did he get in so much trouble for running a joke campaign? Anyways, that wasn't the question you asked. You asked about Ashley and Toby. And yeah, this is the moment where you kind of see they start to understand each other. And it's kind of this sweet moment where Toby realizes after Ashley says, this is my one thing that I have for me, you know, that I don't have to share because I'm sharing my house with you now. And so I think he kind of gets it there. And, you know, Toby's a smart guy. So he hears her and he realizes he's been a bit of a jerk.
He was just so wrapped up in making her life a living hell. And I think he got carried away and they did have that moment. The thing is, Ashley didn't articulate anything, any of her side before that moment, really. So you didn't know what she was struggling with their new living arrangement and why this hurt so much, too. But it did get through to Toby right in the nick of time. And it looks for a moment like Toby, that wasn't going to be enough for him. But in the end, it was. I think he snapped, too. And we're happy he did, because that would have been very messy. That would have been messy.
Uh-huh. I wanted to see Ashley's speech. That's the one thing I'm really missing. I wanted that speech. Everyone said she's a shoo-in. She's an amazing candidate. She's had designs on this election, obviously, for a long time, because she's hitting the ground running, starting at day one of school. And I just, they built it up so much in my mind, how good the speech could be. And then they cut it. I wonder if they shot it. I wonder if it got edited out.
I was thinking the same thing. I wonder if that was something that was shot or at least written. We'll have to ask Melissa when she comes on the show, because she's coming on our next episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I was wondering the same thing as well, if they just ran out of time. Because even right before this scene ends, she says, Toby, just listen to my speech. And then afterwards, if you think I don't deserve it. So like, listen to my speech. And then the next scene is Jimmy walking her home. Congratulations, president.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the audience is left to go, well, it must have been amazing.
It was such a good speech. We didn't even need to see it. We just felt it. We felt it.
Yeah.
And she won. But once again, she also won by default because she was running unopposed.
And baby Drake gets a hug and not a kiss.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It was such a weird, awkward hug, too.
It was.
I mean, everyone was just getting to know each other. But yeah, is this okay? Is this okay? It was a very awkward moment. It was a very awkward moment.
It's just funny because earlier in the episode, he's like got his arm wrapped all the way around her. They're like hip to hip and they're really close and touchy-feely. And then all of a sudden when they say goodbye, it's like, okay, goodbye. And like this really weird, awkward hug. It's like your parents are watching or something. Yeah.
And I mean, we don't know the order it was shot in. If that was, that might've been the first scene they ever shot together. It might've been done before any of the school scenes.
Sure.
So it was like, hey, Aubrey, you remember Melissa? Melissa, Aubrey? Okay. Now remember, you two have been dating for years. You have been intimate together. So yeah, just say goodbye like a couple would say goodbye. Like,
high five. But yeah, no, it's a good point. Like we shoot everything out of order. And sometimes it is at 6 a.m. and you've got to do an intimate scene, or sometimes you've just met the actor and you're supposed to have been in a relationship with them for years.
Some of the actors on Degrassi, and we'll get into this more as it as the show goes on, but because of the age of many of the cast members when they started, some of them had their very first kiss on TV.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is really messed up when you think about it.
Yeah, it is weird. And like, this is before the age of, now we have intimacy coordinators on set. You know, obviously it's somebody to make sure that everyone's boundaries aren't being crossed and feels good about it and it's being communicated properly. It's, you know, part of the whole safe sets thing. And I always asked, I was always like, is it cool if I, you know, like, how can we, you know, where can we do this? But it is a little awkward. And I've certainly had some awkward on camera kisses myself.
They actually, I'm pretty sure. And when we have Melissa on, we can verify this. But the first time that Melissa and Aubrey had to, spoiler alert, had to have a makeout scene, I think they let them go into a room for a little bit because they were supposed to have been in a relationship for a while and they had to come off like they had done this before. And I don't think they were the only cast
members.
So they
did practice kissing in a different room.
Yes.
Oh my God, that is so inappropriate and totally hilarious. Inappropriate.
With an adult saying, more hands, more hands. No.
Better. Definitely yeah. Better.
Yeah.
Cool. So here's what I didn't understand, though. I'm still stuck on this. Like, why is JT in trouble for running a joke campaign? Isn't it kind of just like running a no confidence campaign?
It was, I think it was rule 4.3.
Subsection. No, yeah.
No student shall run a campaign in bad faith. I think it was something like that.
Yeah. Anyways.
But yes. And then, so after Jimmy's very awkward goodbye hug with Ashley, they sit down outside the house and Toby and Ashley have a heart to heart. A corny one, but you know, a pleasant one. With that line that I think Ashley had of, is this the real Toby Isaacs or something like that? When he's like, no, really, I'm proud of you. Congratulations, Ashley. He's like, what have you done with the real Toby Isaacs? but it works. And then they, once again, you see that they are breaking new ground with their step-sibling relationship, and there might be hope for them yet. And it was a nice ending, I thought.
It was a nice ending. Yeah. It was sweet. And yeah, you just got the sense that they were making the best of a bad situation. Neither of them wanted. And that's what they connected on. And I thought it was lovely.
It was a very heartwarming episode, a very cute episode. And when you look at it in contrast to episode one, these are like completely different shows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's, first of all, almost none of the adult cast from the first episode, like Joey's not in it, et cetera, mm-hmm. You know, except for obviously the school staff and then Ashley's mom or Toby's mom. I'm not sure which one that is.
It was Ashley's mom. Yeah.
It was Ashley's mom. Okay. Yeah. But like the contrast between these two, they're like completely different shows. This is like a sitcom scenario. Like this is just a cute little episode of a show.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the first one was like setting up all of these legacy characters and then having this very serious episode and theme. And it's a terrifying episode. And then all of a sudden it's like, who's running for school president. And it's all these new kids are in it. And you're like, I was just so confused watching this the first time.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I get, it totally makes sense. I guess they had to introduce all those characters. And it was like a little bit, you know, it was a lot different. But the first episode, they obviously came out swinging. Like they were just like, here's where we're going to go. Right. Now we're kind of like light and fluffy and happy and
And my first watch through of the series a few years ago, I was always asking, like, I wonder if this is going to be one of those episodes or one of the fun filler episodes. I always like the fun filler ones. They're cute and they're funny, and I just like it, man. I don't like it when everything's too serious.
Totally. And it'd be hard to sustain that, you know, every single episode to go all the way.
I think that would lead to a bit of audience fatigue. You want it to go back and forth. You want light and then you want heavy to be, you know, kind of, even if it's not an equal share back and forth, enough to just have a breather of an episode. And as I said before, I thought that Mother and Child Reunion Part 1 and 2 felt like a TV movie, and this felt like the first episode of Degrassi, an actual episodic formula to the show. And I think it was very tactful that they went from something so heavy to something a little bit lighter while establishing or introducing all of these new characters, and also telling the audience, yes, there was an original Degrassi. Yes, these characters are still going to play a big part in these seasons, at least the early seasons, but this is a new show and this is your central cast. And so get to know them, you know?
Okay, so we've got a bunch of fan questions that have been sent to us. And like we always say, if you have any questions of your own that you want us to answer on the show, please email us at dgradspodcast@gmail.com and we will be happy to get to those. Andy, what do we got today?
Okay, so I've got one from Greg. This is a question that I'm curious about too, because you guys have talked recently about the conventions that you guys have gone to and kind of how you guys kind of reconnected through that and spent a lot of time going through these conventions. So they ask, tell us about some of your experiences together at the conventions. Any highlights, any drama? What's that like for you guys?
I mean, the highlights would be like, we're also hanging out backstage with actors from TV shows that we grew up watching. I know specifically for me, like we were at one recently. Few of the cast from Lost were there, and that show for me was like came around at a really integral moment, post breakup moment, was a best friend, so meeting them was like, holy smokes, this is incredible.
Not to forget, Mike, that at lunch at the last convention that we went to, we found ourselves learning about salsa and Argentine tango for a good like 20-30 minutes with Tommy Chong. He just came back in from outside doing what we all know he's loves to do, and came, sat down next to us. He is so charming and friendly and full of stories, and just starts talking about romance and dating and his story with his wife of how she is a salsa dancer and he wanted to get closer to her and started learning all these romantic dances. And
that's right, he was giving us relationship advice. I'm supposed to enroll in Argentine tango. I totally forgot. Gonna save my marriage.
Yeah.
But it was really sweet. So meeting all of these amazing, you know, celebrities that we love, that's a highlight.
Yeah. So it's definitely not spending time together and bonding with your castmates from the show. It's about everybody else.
No, it's about getting wined and dined on someone else's dollar and meeting celebrities. That's what it is. No. But we've been doing this for, I know I've said it a few times now, but Mike and I are fast approaching, or maybe have already passed our 1 year anniversary of your first convention in Hamilton. And it's so fun to hang out with old friends who are, we're all grown up now, but we're there for the reason that brought us together in the first place. And then we do the panels and it's just a trip after trip down memory lane. And yes, a lot of the same questions come up over and over, but then someone throws you a curveball and we just play off of each other. And we just have, Mike, if you're not having a great time, you are a fantastic actor because it looks like you're having a great time at these things.
I appreciate the compliment about my acting skills. What about the drama?
What drama?
Any drama? I don't know if there's been any real drama at the conventions that I've seen. Everyone's so nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
The event organizers are usually really cool. We get, you know, we have people there that sort of make sure they run everything smoothly and they're always fantastic. Yeah. I don't know if there's been any real drama.
No, there's some celebrities that come with a disclaimer that, you know, like they don't really like to be talked to, especially when they're eating something like that. I won't mention any names, but you walk into the room and there was one that I really wanted to talk to. But he just had the energy of like, no. And all the characters that he plays are people that I would never mess with in my day to day. So just feeling that energy come off of him. And he was sitting, this was in Tennessee, and he was sitting, they're all round tables in the green room. And there are about like 10 to 12 chairs at any one of these tables. And he was sitting all alone, not even with his agent. It was just him. I think everyone was giving him a wide berth. So I'm like, I'm not going to be the person to go over with all my charm and go like, hey, I know you hate people, but I'm Shane Kipple. We're good.
Spoiler. Yeah. Spoiler alert. It was actually Aubrey.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a very painful story to tell.
I've definitely embarrassed myself in front of some of those people, just like gushing to them. And like, I think Michael Ironside would probably, you know,
we're going to see him again. Really. You have a chance to.
Am I really?
Set it right. Yeah.
We're going to be best buds after this. This one. I feel it. This is the one. We're going to become BFFs.
Listen, if you are nervous about how you came off to any celebrity that you've met so far in the green rooms, trust me. When we're in Rhode Island and I get to talk to John Bernthal, nothing is going to be more embarrassing than how I'm going to fall flat on my face with that. Because he's of this day right now, he's one of my favorite actors. I think he's fantastic. When I saw his name on that list, on a list that's already incredibly impressive, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's not going to be pretty.
I'm going to have to catch you while you faint.
He's gonna go all Punisher on my ass and I'll deserve it.
Yeah, I've only done a couple of conventions. The one that I really liked was this horror convention in Southern California, and my favorite part was really just meeting the fans. Like, that's great. Like, that's so cool to just like talk to the fans and stuff, but also your neighboring booths and whoever else you have around you, because you're stuck there all day sitting at the table, so you get to know them like a neighbor. And when there's nobody around, you're just chatting it up with them, and it's just kind of like getting to know them in a real life scenario like that, where you're working together. It's pretty cool.
Totally. And we should say the fan, Andy has the right answer. It is ultimately about the fans. That is why we do the conventions in the first place, is to connect with fans. But the perk is that, you know, sometimes you're like, you know, somebody that you absolutely love. Lorraine Bracco. I got to meet Lorraine Bracco, and I had just seen Goodfellas like the weekend before, because I thought, I gotta watch this movie. And she was so nice. She did a video for my friend who just loves her. So, you know, they say don't meet your heroes, but I would say it's always worth the risk, because you might have a magical moment.
My moment, the still standout moment from any one of the conventions, was meeting RJ Mitt, Walt Jr. from Breaking Bad, because myself and my family, we have to watch Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul at least once a year, probably twice. And the fact that I bump into him in the hallway of in my hotel in Tennessee, and by the end of that day, he's asking me where we're going out for dinner and drinks afterwards. And I got to bro out with him, and he is such a cool guy. Anyway, that was my moment. My family didn't care about anybody else who was there. It was just a you were with RJ. And I have his number in my phone. And I've never called him, but sometimes I just look at it and go, huh, that was good. Anyway.
Okay, so I have a few questions myself, and I think this is the perfect time for me to kind of nerd out with you guys on some stuff that I think a lot of the fans are probably thinking. And my first question is, because you guys talked about having to go to study and stuff during work while you guys were working on the show on the last episode with Miriam, what was that like? Like, how did school work for you guys? Because you talked about your high school and stuff. Were you guys going to a high school while also going to work? Or were you guys going to, like, did they have a specific type of school that you were going to at work? How did all that work out?
So many of the cast members, myself not included, were going to arts programs that were meant for child athletes, musicians, actors that would be missing a lot of school. So I don't know exactly how their school worked it out. We did have on-set tutors that we were expected to put at an absolute minimum 2 hours of time in that they were keeping track of. And if we had extra time throughout the day, we would have to bank up to an additional 4 hours just in case there was a day that we were involved in every scene and we couldn't make that mandatory minimum 2 hours. They would draw from that bank. I went to a normal high school. So what I had to do was have a buddy system in each one of my classes and work in tandem with the guidance counselor to be able to get the week of work ahead of time given to me so I could do it at school. I even had to write a couple exams on set, not with the rest of the school.
Seems like so exhausting, like so much work to do school and also work on a TV show.
No, it was life. Like, it was a rush for me. Maybe other people found it to be stressful, but I thought, like, you know, when you're sitting on set, in a private dressing room, writing an exam and going like, I'm getting paid and writing an exam right now. And I'm not saying like that there are, it's the only life I know, but I remember not having a problem with it. I rather enjoyed the switch up. And then every time I went back to school, everyone was so excited to see me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Mike? Shane, where you been?
Shane's back.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, oh God, guys, I'm like the worst student. I skipped, but I'm also a little bit older. So I think the requirement for me, by the time I started doing Degrassi, the requirement for me to be in school and doing those hours was basically up. I like managed to avoid it, but I was tutored on other sets before that. And very much what Shane said, it's like you're sitting there in between takes. It's long days. You're tired. It's enough to try to remember your lines. And then you're being dragged in. The kids, you don't want to be there. You know, frankly, you just don't want to be there. Also, you're doing a TV show, so it's really easy to go, I mean, hey, guys, like, how about this? I've got a career already. Why do I need to learn grade 10 math right now?
Yep.
You know, like, I'm acting. I'm on TV. Mm-hmm. I have a job. This is like a real career. So yeah, it's tough for those kids to sit in those seats. And I do remember being on the set of Degrassi and like probably being a unwelcome distraction for the tutors who would be there. And I'd be like, yo, Shane, let's go. Like, come on, see, check this out. You know, and because he'd be locked in a room trying to study. And that was a bad influence. Maybe it rubbed off on our characters in some way.
Now, at your guys' schools, and I have to ask this because these types of episodes, the school elections, are always so weird to me because I did homeschool for a lot of high school. I think the last 3 years of high school, I was homeschooled. But even people that I talk to, they're like, no, wait, we didn't have elections at our school. It wasn't like everybody came to the auditorium and we had speeches and stuff. Like, it wasn't this big political circus like it is on TV shows.
Totally.
All school TV shows have to have this thing because it's just such a good plot point. But did you guys have that over there? Because that wasn't a huge thing in our schools here in California, at least.
I don't think so.
I don't remember it happening. If it did, I was not there that day. I was on set.
I think it was just fabricated for TV. Like, yeah. I don't think it's a real thing.
It could have been. Also, I went to an arts high school, so nobody really wanted to do anything extracurricular unless it was their, you know, art, dance or music or visual arts or whatever. So, yeah, no one. It was also the funny joke, too, was like, you know, our school sucked at sports because we're an arts high school. And like, who's playing sports in an arts high school?
Yeah. Okay. So one other thing I want to bring up, this isn't a question. It turns out Nick Kroll had plans to come on to Degrassi with his character from Wheels Ontario. It was a scheduling problem. They couldn't get him on there. And this was in 2013. So it would have been like season 13 of the show. So most all of you guys were gone by then. I think that
before the Kroll years.
Yeah. 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 And so he was supposed to go on the show with his character. And they said he was probably going to be a teacher or something like
that. Wow. That's insane. So weird. I love that.
But I mean, it's not any weirder than like Kevin Smith and, you know, Jason coming on the show. That was pretty weird too, right?
Yeah, and when we get to those episodes, that's going to be a lot of fun to talk about. And, you know, if the stars align, maybe we get Kevin here to speak about those episodes. But a crazy thing, you know, spoiler alert, Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes will make appearances on Degrassi. Also, along with some of their friends, like Alanis Morissette. But a funny thing about Alanis, I think originally it was not supposed to be Alanis. Kevin wanted to get Matt Damon and Ben Affleck to be in that episode, and they were unavailable. It was a scheduling conflict. Yeah, yeah, that would have been so fun.
Imagine working with those two guys. That would have been so great.
Amazing. My question is, like, what was Nick's character going to be? Because, you know, he does all these zany characters. I'm just curious.
It was going to be his Wheels character. I think it was Mikey is what he called
legs.
Him. It
was going to be the actual... He was Legs. Yeah.
He was Legs.
Was he legs? Okay.
Yeah, they called him Legs because he was the only one that could walk.
Okay. I remember that now.
Yeah,
he was going to be his character.
Your name is Legs. If we call you Legs, your name is Legs. Legs.
It is kind of like an interesting thing here when you're combining these different universes, right? Like, because Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes, it feels like an adjacent universe, but it also requires a little bit of zhuzhing up to make them come together in a way that kind of makes sense.
I can't wait to talk about those.
Yeah. And I feel like the Nick Kroll thing too, because it is essentially a spoof on Degrassi. So for him to come on in earnest would have been... I'm just curious to know how they would have justified that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, apparently they did that whole sketch because both Nick Kroll and tons of the writers on the show were all huge fans of Degrassi and Canada in general.
Right. Yeah.
I really do think, Mike, that if we could get him on here to talk about that and just talk about his experience with Degrassi as well, I don't think it's far-fetched. If he put it out there like that, I'm holding on to hope. I don't think that's beyond the realm of possibility at all.
I would just sit here I would just take him making fun of the show and spoofing it. I would just listen.
You're right. It was awful. No, you're right. It was so Canadian. Yeah, you're right. No. Do another character voice, please. Do another character voice, please.
Do me. No, do Shane.
Nick, if you're hearing this, we're coming for you.
So that'll do for the mailbag. Great episode, guys. So we are setting up a Patreon. So listeners, if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/dgrads. You can sign up and support the show today. You'll get ad-free versions of all of the episodes. It's the best way to listen. Plus, we're going to do some bonus content in the coming weeks. So you make sure you check that out. Sign up, support the show, patreon.com/dgrads.
Yeah, thank you very much, Andy. And once again, thank you very much for listening. We are having a great time. Hopefully you are too. This has been the DGrads podcast with Shane and Mike. And Mike, what info do you have for them?
Yeah, if you guys have any questions, thoughts, or just want to share your experiences or Degrassi memories, please feel free to hit us up anytime at dgradspodcast@gmail.com. We'd be more than happy to reply.
And don't forget to rate and review the podcast on your platform of choice. It really, really helps us out.
All right, that is it for now, folks. We will see you next week. And don't miss our next episode because we've got the lovely guest, Melissa McIntyre, joining us. See you then.
Oh. It's going to be a party. See you then.